This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. Joining us today is Dr. Stephen Rowley, a PhD, who is a psychotherapist practicing in Bainbridge Island, Washington. His professional past includes serving as an elementary school teacher and a principal and a school district superintendent in Washington and California. He has been a college professor for three universities, teaching educational administration and organizational theory. He holds a PhD in administration and policy analysis from Stanford University, and his new book is Lost Coin, a memoir of adoption and destiny. Looking forward to hearing from you, and Dr. Rowley, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome, and thanks for joining us here today on the program. So for starters, if you would, Dr. Rowley, what actually prompted you to write this book, The Lost Coin? Let's start there.
Well, the book was arguably inside me all along, but in March of 2022, I received a notification from 23andMe from a relative that was connected to my heretofore unfound birth father. And once I connected with that person and discovered I had four half-sisters, my birth father had been dead for some time, it triggered the whole kind of recounting the whole search I had really from the time I was quite young, and included in the middle of my life when I was 40, finding my birth mother, by tracking her down by, I'll call it sort of regular detective work through paperwork and agencies and so forth. And this came completely out of the blue, but I think it completed the sense of a whole journey. And I literally 2 days after I had this information and realized I had established new links with the family, I began to write, and I wrote 5 or 6 days a week, 6 or 7 hours a day. And by Labor Day, 2022, I had at least a draft. So it was important for me, I think, not only just for my own sense of completion, but as a psychotherapist, I'm bringing in a whole different perspective to the life of the adoptee. So it's a way of giving back, I think, which I think was the most appropriate way in a memoir for me, rather than doing a research book or a how-to guide.
Well, certainly got to hand it to you for your effort to get this done and completed. I'm sure those that have read this already are appreciative of your efforts as well. Tell me, what's the one thing you want others to learn about adoption?
Well, it's a two-parter. First is that anytime you meet somebody who is either adopted or adopted a child, or there's someone in the family who, your extended family, who is raised by somebody other than by their biological parents, those stories are all over the map. They are a different story, and they're crazy and sometimes heartbreaking and sometimes full of, you know, joy and the reunion, but they're all different. On the inside, my point of the book is that on the inside, this separation of child and mother, it forms a type of trauma, a kind of what we call a primal wound in the psychotherapy business. And that wound, that traumatic impact, stays with us for a lifetime. And so our sense of self, the kind of inner orphan, so to speak, that we become consciously or not, the behaviors we begin to see manifest in later life, that's our common bond. And as I've been on a couple of speaking tours and podcasts and just meeting friends and whoever I meet on the street or on the airplane, those stories come out and they suddenly relate to the fact that that stuff inside them has been with them all along. And so it's not fatal and it doesn't make us victims, but it is something that really resonates by shedding light on the interior life of the adoptee.
Certainly some great points made, no doubt about that. And I'd be curious as well, I'm sure listeners would agree, what was it like to find your birth parents over the course of your life?
Well, my book recounts, particularly in the middle section, actually finding my birth mother after a lot of work, tracking her down. As somebody warned me in the search, I might not find Elizabeth Taylor when I found her. That turned out to be mostly true. It was in a tenement exit. She had been out of a halfway house for drug and rehab. Things had not gone well for her for her entire life, although she did have three other children of her own with another man. So when I met her, the first thing she said to me was, "Who the hell gave you the right to look me up? I didn't give you my address." And so that started on a rocky road, but within minutes, we realized, and through both things, in her, she had 500 books in storage, she had a Kandinsky on the wall, a poster. This wasn't a person suffering from, you know, dementia, or she was quite alive. And so once we discovered each other, that world, her world and my world, opened to each other. And I still today, when I do readings, I can't quite make my way through it about the profound insight and connection that we had after all these years. And when I left after that weekend, I didn't see her again. She died two years later. But that reunion was really the kind of almost the centerpiece of my life. The last one, as I mentioned, birth father, very different. He'd been dead. This is mostly transactions through other relatives. We shared pictures back and forth, family stories. And when I saw the pictures of him, as well as my birth mother, it was like unmistakable. I looked like both of them. So that just has such an enormous impact, a kind of, you know, some connection to far in the past. And I think state the obvious, it was an affair that went on for a little while. And they never had anything to do with each other after I was conceived. But that bond with her in particular was the thing that kept me through this work. And I actually still have her picture from when she was about 18 years old. It's been on my desk while I wrote. So that reunion to me was one of the centerpieces of my life. And also, in addition, of course, being married, my wife and I adopted a boy at 4.5 years old. And that's an entirely different story too. So, but it was a bit of a pay forward to adopt him, as well as just falling in love with him when we first met him.
Well, I certainly do appreciate your getting real with us and sharing some personal background here, and also sharing The Lost Coin a little bit with us here today, a memoir of adoption and destiny. We're speaking with Dr. Stephen Rowley, a PhD, a psychotherapist practicing in Bainbridge Island, Washington. His new book is The Lost Coin, a memoir of adoption and destiny. And he's joined us here today on eHealth Radio's Health News Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, to continue on, what is a Zen koan and how does it relate to the title of your book?
A Zen koan, without getting into a big treatise on that, is a kind of, it's used in certain Buddhist traditions or lineages. It's a way to help. It's not a puzzle to be solved. The most common one we all know about is what's the sound of one hand clapping. But the one I've chosen, a coin lost in the river is found in the river, is used by others and for myself as a way to, switch over from rational thinking into the deeper intuitive part of ourselves. It was on my computer the whole time. When I tried to find a way to end the book, that appeared to me, that it suddenly occurred to me, there was something about that puzzle, that mystery, that seemed to be appropriate as a way to end the kind of the one of the three lines of the book that was there from the beginning of my life: who am I? And so the who am I question, I think both for my life, other people's lives, and certainly as a therapist, comes back again and again. So rather than try to bring my book or that particular issue about who am I to concrete closure, I ended by reopening the idea that actually this sense of mystery of who we are on a soul level, on the interior level, is not something we can let form in concrete, not let it become static. It's something that's open. So we use that question and that koan as a way of renewing the question again: who am I, what am I about? And it still operates for me, even though I came to some major conclusions about my life by writing the memoir. It still has a very provocative, mysterious tone to it, I think, that message to me, that I think others who also have told me really resonate with them. And for some people who never find their parents, if they are so desired, it still leaves a sense of mystery. If I don't find my birth parents, who am I? If I do find my birth parents, who am I? So it gives some consolation, I think, for those who are frustrated and find their birth parents, saying, even those of us who had a good life and found our parents, it still leaves the question open from a deep psychological, I'll say almost a spiritual level: who am I? And so anyway, that's the way I ended it. And it's been a useful technique or tool in finishing the book.
Yeah, certainly some interesting questions to ask yourself. Who am I if I find my parents? Who am I if I don't? Really, really some strong, valid points right there to think about. Tell me, what advice do you have for those adoptees who struggle to find their birth parents?
Well, my book begins with a quote. We don't have time to get in, but there's an Austrian poet by the name of Rainer Maria Rilke. And that quote is saying to stay with the questions. And because it may be that in your life, those questions are not to be answered in your life, or at least that stage of your life. But to stay with the question, to stay with an open mind to that, that someday, I think the line is, someday we may live into those questions as we get older. Yeah, the last Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live some distant day into the answer. So number one, being able to tolerate not knowing, having the patience to see what else comes because of the unfinished search. That'd be number one. Two is that there are a lot of resources around to help find it. It's 23andMe, Ancestry.com. There are genealogical associations and the like, and private enterprises for fees can actually help a lot more today than was true when I first did mine. So there's some hope. And I think also there are different websites out there that have others just in your same predicament. And there's a lot of solace and knowledge, I think, that comes from groups or from personal experience when we don't find those parents. I belong to one that's the Willows Maternity Sanitarium in Kansas City, Kansas, where I was born. It's a very robust, there's 600 people in that that belong to that website. And so the stories that come up, both good and bad, happy and tragic, you find yourself in that community. So you are part of some solace. You are part of an adoption community, whether you find your parents or not. I think that can give great consolation to those who are still frustrated.
Dr. Rowley, really appreciate the visit here today, the focus, and thank you for what you do as well. As we conclude, what insight can you share with your fellow psychotherapists who are working with adoptees or the parents of an adopted child? I'm sure that would be some great feedback coming from you.
Right. Well, this is a bit of a judgment, I suppose, but in my training, in my orientation as a Jungian and depth psychologist, the whole basis of our work is based on the idea that there is such a thing as the unconscious, and it's at play all the time, whether we're aware of it or not. So for those that, whether we are or not in that orientation, it's important to point out that some of the behaviors we see that might be seemingly counterproductive as a consequence of the early trauma, whether it's being aggressive, angry, not settled down, or on the other hand, depressed, withdrawn over life, or not being able to hold relationships. Those are all telltale signs of self-protection, of self-defense. So to recognize there's a wounded part of us that's still in there. I mean, I like when we met our son the first time when he was four, it was like I could recognize in him that splintered part of himself from a very tragic early life. And it's as though we're trying to reconnect to that splintered part. For me, I mean, even today, I think there's still a wounded little four-year-old still in him. And part of the parenting and part of a therapist's job is to recognize that that's there and to gently over time make it safe to allow that splintered part to rejoin, in a more integrated and healing way with the greater self. So how we do that exactly, that's all case by case and so forth. But I think that recognition of the imprint of trauma on the soul, on the psyche, is with us from whether it's the separation of mother and child or some other form of early childhood trauma. That stuff's in us. It's there. And it doesn't have to be wreck your life, because a lot of people have it. It's a matter of how we bring it to consciousness and then be able to reintegrate that wounded part back into our greater self.
Once again, Dr. Rowley, we want to thank you for spending a moment with us here today on eHealth Radio. Of course, you're the author of The Lost Coin, A Memoir of Adoption and Destiny. We've been speaking about that today. If listeners wanted to pick up the book and or to get more information on yourself, where's the best place online to check things out?
It's www.stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Rowley, R-O-W-L-E-Y, 108.com.
And of course, listeners, as always, you can find this link within the show notes of this broadcast. Again, it is StephenRowley108.com. Dr. Rowley, all the best, and thanks so much for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
Thanks so much, Eric.
And you're certainly more than welcome. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Rowley, a PhD and a psychotherapist practicing in Bainbridge Island, Washington. His new book is The Lost Coin, A Memoir of Adoption and Destiny. And for all the details, visit StephenRowley108.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit ehealthradionetwork.com.